according to Mark. After John's arrest, Jesus appeared in Galilee proclaiming the good news of God. This is the time of fulfillment. The reign of God is at hand. Change your hearts and minds and believe this good news. While walking by the Sea of Galilee, Jesus saw the brothers Simon and Andrew casting their nets into the sea, since they fished by trade. Jesus said to them, "Follow me, and I will make you fishers of humankind." They immediately abandoned their nets and followed Jesus. Proceeding a little further along, Jesus saw the brothers James and John Bar Zebedee. They too were in their boats putting nets in order. Immediately Jesus called them, and they left their father Zebedee standing in the boat with the hired help and went off in the company of Jesus. The Gospel of Christ. Please be seated. Before we launch into our Bible study, what do you think of our new windows? Are they clear? Actually, I was thinking, we never had to worry about washing the windows before, but I can see that that's a new job for us now, is cleaning the windows. The bars in the middle are gone, and we can open here and at the back and get fresh air in this place. This is an amazing new possibility. But for what strikes me is the new perspective. I used to figure out where the center of the church was by the bar in the middle of that window. I have no idea. So I'll always
lost your bearings.
Yeah, I've lost my bearings. But I have a different perspective on the trees out there. It's amazing. I have a different perspective on the world. I'm sure you have a different perspective here. It's amazing. And so I'm going to say publicly, we're all very grateful to the family that made this possible for their very generous gift. This didn't happen by accident. And we're very grateful for these new windows, not just because they offer us a new perspective on the world around us, but because they're environmentally much better in terms of our planet. We're conserving energy, and this is a wonderful thing. So this is a new step for us. So I was thinking about these new windows and the new perspective that they give us, and wondering, how do I give a new perspective on this very familiar gospel text? This text, which you have here in three translations. Translations are always interpretations, and so we're going to do some further interpreting this morning. You have the version that I read from, which is the Inclusive Bible, the first egalitarian translation. I've got there for you the New Revised Standard Version, which is generally the one that a lot of mainline Protestant churches use in liturgy to read. Some use the New International Version, but the New Revised Standard Version is the most commonly used one. And then for those of you who hearken back to another time and another place, looking around, that's probably most of us, there's the King James Version, which is a different interpretation when you read it. But there we go. We're going to do some further interpreting. My first memory of this particular text, I think I was around 15 years old. I just started going to church. And you know, when a new warm body shows up at church, you get volunteered for all kinds of things. And I was volunteered to help corral little children so that the choir director could teach them, "I will make you fishers of men." And it had actions to it. Did anybody remember this? "I will make you fishers of men, fishers of men, fishers of men." It goes on and on. It's a really horrible little trite little tune. But it had actions, you know. "I will make you," I don't know, I think you cast a fishing rod. And I'm not very good at that kind of stuff. Like, the singing part was pretty bad. But that wasn't the worst part. It was, I could never, when someone does actions in a song, I hide behind someone else. You notice I rarely clap here. It's not because I disapprove of clapping in church. It's I don't have any rhythm. And I get you all wrong, you know. So I kind of dance and sway. That's what I do. Anyway, that's my first memory of this particular text. So I thought we'd begin. Do you remember this text? And what's in this text for you? New disciples? New disciples.
Help people follow.
Okay, is that in the text? Is the word disciple in the text?
No,
it's an honest question. Because we often use words that aren't in the text, and that's perfectly fine. So, new disciples, anybody else got anything that comes to mind from this text?
Calling people out of their regular life.
Calling people out of the regular life, okay.
I always used to be amazed, like, how do you just drop everything and go? What about saying goodbye to your family?
Yeah.
It just didn't feel right.
Poor old Zebedee's dad, right? Left him in the boat with the hired help. Like, what's that about? All right. So this text is familiar to us. And the problem when a text is really familiar to us is we tend to look at it through the same lenses as we've always looked at it. I'm guilty of this. I'm sure that you're guilty of this as well. And this week, actually for the last few days, I've been getting photographs from Sherilyn, who is in... she's on a tour with Lutheran World Relief. She's touring Jordan and the Holy Land. And the pictures that I've been getting for the last 3 days are of various views of the Sea of Galilee. And so I've been really mindful that this text takes place at the Sea of Galilee. And so I'm thinking, okay, part of the preacher's dilemma is to try and make old texts that we're all familiar with sound a little different. So, you know, I started by looking at commentaries. I started by looking at old sermons that other people have written. I even resorted to looking at sermons I'd written. And it all sounded the same, right? You know, it's a call to evangelism, right? To make disciples, right? That's how I've always viewed it. It's a call to make disciples. What are we making disciples for? Disciples of whom? Let's start with that. Disciples of Jesus. And so what kinds of sermons have you heard on this text? What have you been encouraged to do by preachers based on this text? To be a disciple, okay.
The old phrase that we were given was to preach the gospel.
To preach the gospel.
To preach the gospel.
Why?
I wonder if it's an old dilemma. Is, do you preach the gospel or do you go out and do the work in helping others?
Okay.
And I think that's always been part of the church's dilemma as well.
Lawrence has been hanging around Lutherans for a long time. He's really familiar with this dilemma. And we Lutherans, we tend to cop out of the, even though we've got evangelist in our name, like we're the Evangelical Lutheran Church of Canada, we don't like the evangelical part, right? So we don't like preaching the gospel.
Yes.
We'd rather just let them know we are Christians by our love. You know, we'll do the good works, right? We'll, even though there's a problem with James, but we'll do the good works. We're not the preachy kind. We'll wait until someone asks us about Jesus. And then we'll give them a little short answer. So I could think of all kinds of sermons about, you know, go out there. Tell people about Jesus. Right? Why? Why would you tell people about Jesus? What's the point?
Are you asking what we thought was the point some time ago, or what might be the point now?
Sure, all of that.
Well, for me, the reason I would talk about Jesus is that I see Jesus as a revolutionary.
Mm.
And I think we need a revolution.
We need a revolution. Terrific.
So people need people to emulate, I think. And I think that some of the really basic things that Jesus taught about the way to be in the world make a heck of a lot of sense to me,
mm-hmm.
and would be very useful today as one way. And I really like saying to people, yeah, Jesus was a revolutionary.
All right.
And, you know, so what do you think?
Excuse me. Okay, spoken like a true rebel. I like that.
Yeah.
I love it. Revolutionary. Any other reasons why you would want to tell people about Jesus?
I agree with that, but that is, I think, more a modern statement.
Mm-hmm.
Usually, Jesus is, at least when I was brought up, it seemed more like you get more people around you, increase your fellowship, and just do what the church does. It's been the main purpose, seem to gather more people, not to teach revolution.
So we've got a couple of dilemmas going here. We've got the dilemma over here, do you preach the gospel or do you live the gospel? And we've got this dilemma where Jesus is a revolutionary, but the church needs members, right? This is sort of the tension in the text here, right? So a lot of the sermons that I read in the past week had to do with precisely that, the dilemma that the church finds itself in. I mean, shrinking members. How many empty seats are there around here? It would be incumbent upon me to tell you all to go and proclaim the gospel. Tell people that Jesus is a revolutionary. Tell people that the message that Jesus came and bring them back here. Put them in the seats, right? This has been a clarion call for the church. I will make you fishers of men. The whole reason we were teaching those little children that song is that they could fish for men. Right? That doesn't sound right. So they could fish for people. I'm going to argue in a little while that I think we need to keep that text in its exclusive form for a reason. Something you didn't think you were going to hear from me. So I've been looking at these pictures of Sherilyn at the Sea of Galilee and remembering the various visits that John Dominic Crossan has made here to Holy Cross and what he taught us about what was happening around the Sea of Galilee, round about the time that the anonymous gospel storyteller that we call Mark put this story on paper. Do you remember some of the things that were going on around Galilee, the Sea of Galilee, in the first century, end of the first century? So there were fishers there, right? And they were fishermen, let's put it that way. To the best of our knowledge, they were fishermen. Who controlled the geography in that area? Romans, exactly. Taxes. Okay, so what we have here, there was a revolution percolating. You're absolutely right about Jesus was a revolutionary, right? There was a revolution percolating, and the fishers were disenfranchised. The Romans had come in. They weren't the first to occupy the land, but they were the ones occupying the land when this story was first put down on paper. And they decided that this was a great money-making scheme, so they started selling licenses to fish. Does that sound familiar? And so the fishers of Galilee had to purchase a license. They purchased the license from the tax collectors. And the tax collectors worked for the puppet government that the Romans had put in place, the Herodians, right? Herod's tribe, bunch. I won't say much more than that. What I'm getting at here is that the fishers in this area are economically deprived. They're being persecuted on all kinds of levels, but they're being extorted so that Herod can build all his wonderful palaces, right? That's where the money is going. Have you heard this story before? Not specifically about this situation, but today, right? The money is being extracted. People are being, I mean, Canada has a reputation now, sad to say, for extracting minerals in developing and countries in the world and extorting from the poor people on the land. Like, that's us. So think of us as the Romans for a bit. We do that. First Nations people would argue. I mean, fisheries. Talk to someone from Newfoundland about fisheries in the last 30 years, right? So the control of the fish is in the hands of the people, the very people who are oppressing the fishers. All right. So where do we go from here? Well, I have always read this text as a call to evangelize. And whether you do that evangelism by being love in the world or whether you do that evangelism by proclaiming the gospel, telling people about Jesus, I've always heard it as encouragement. Follow Jesus and he'll teach you how to bring people in. How to convince people that you're following the right person. You know, how to grow the church. I confess there are two sermons that I have preached on this text way back when. I didn't preach on it last year or the year before. I preached on Jonah, which is the other option for today. But the first two sermons I preached, I encouraged you all to go out there and bring people in. I did that. Go out there and tell people about Jesus. Tell people about what we're doing in here. Be fishers. Go catch some fish. There's lots of fish out there. The last one, I talked about the fish who look like us. You know, the old people? We got lots to offer. Tell them to come on in here. There's some really cool old people in here. You know, I said something to that effect. So that's how I saw this text. And so I was trying to figure out, well, what do I do with it now? What do I do with it? They've heard all that before. And this book is a commentary on the Gospel of Mark that my dear friend and mentor, the Reverend Dr. John Fogelman, member of this parish, gave me on my 10th anniversary here. And it's called The Binding of the Strong Man, a political reading of Mark's story of Jesus by Ched Myers. So it's a political reading of the Gospel of Mark, already confessing that it has a particular hermeneutic, a particular way of interpreting the text from the political perspective. So it's going to look at that revolutionary that you're talking about, right? So let's look at the text itself. And specifically about the words that the gospel storyteller puts in the mouth of Jesus. Jesus said to them, "Follow me. I will make you fishers," and the translation that we used here this morning, "I will make you fishers of humankind." The NRSV says, "I will make you fishers of people." And King James, "Come ye after me, and I will make you to become fishers of men." Boy, I'm glad I don't have to read from the King James Version anymore. "Come ye after me, and I will make you to become fishers of men." I think it's important. The text needs to stay as men. In fact, if I read this ever again, it'll be fishers of men. And that's not because I want to exclude women, but I think that men were the target. Men were the target. And the reason men were the target is because of what Jesus is promising to train up his disciples to do. He's training them up to fish for men. Now, some would say, well, he's targeting fishers, so he's going to use that kind of language. What Ched Myers suggests is that we have to go beyond that. He's not just targeting them. He's not just speaking to an audience of fishermen. He's speaking to an audience of Jewish fishermen. Jewish fishermen who would have been well-versed in the Hebrew Scriptures. In the Hebrew Scriptures, there are specific metaphors that are used by the prophets. And one of those metaphors is hook a fish. Hook a fish. It's in the book of the prophet Jeremiah, Ezekiel, and Amos. Hooking fish. And it has a specific meaning. The metaphor has a specific meaning. To hook a fish is to bring judgment upon the rich, upon the persecutors, upon those folks who are not doing justice for the people. Jesus is going to teach these guys how to hook a fish. Jesus is going to teach these guys how to go after the very ones who are persecuting them. This is not about evangelism. Catherine's right. It's about revolution. It's about revolution. Jesus says, "Follow me, and I will teach you how to hook those fish." Who are the fish again? The Romans and the Herodians, who are collaborating with the Romans and extorting money. The rich. The rich. "I will teach you how to bring judgment upon the rich. These were Jewish fishers who were being abused, who had no love for the Herodians, who were paying exorbitant amounts for licenses to fish in their lake. It was ripe for revolution. It was ripe for an uprising. And what is Jesus talking about? He's talking about bringing in the realm of God. That's what our translation puts it, the realm of God, which is the kingdom of God in the NRSV, the kingdom of God, the empire of God. In Greek, the basileia of God. What's that going to look like? Are the rich going to be extorting from the poor in the realm of God? And what does Jesus say about this? It is at hand. When we talk about the kingdom of God, we often think about some far-off, distant thing. Jesus says, it's at hand. Follow me. I'm going to my father would say, I'm going to show you how to gut those fish. You know, I'm going to show you how to get it done. I'm going to show you how to take it to the man. I'm going to show you what needs doing to create justice. That's what this text is talking about within its own historical context. When we look at it through particular windows, when we look at it through the window of the church is going to interpret this for the church's purposes, right? The gospel storyteller that we call Mark is living after 70. The temple has been destroyed. Many of the people have been sent out into the diaspora. The Jewish people have been scattered. They have no home of their own. He's speaking directly to this Jewish community who have been slaughtered in many ways by their Roman oppressors and are continuing to be persecuted by their Roman oppressors. And he's saying, follow Jesus. He has a way. He will show us how to hook those fish. He will show us how to bring judgment upon those fish. And the kind of judgment that Jesus is talking about is non-violent resistance, right? Jesus didn't die because he was a religious teacher. That's not why Jesus died. Jesus didn't die because he was a nice guy who told people to be moral. Jesus died because he was a political threat to empire. And he was talking about revolution. But he was talking about non-violent resistance to the Romans. He died because he refused to take up arms against the Romans. He was a non-violent resister. So, looking through the perspective of these persecuted and abused fishers, what might this text say to us today? Who are we in this text? Let's start. I mean, who are we?
Collaborators.
Collaborators, okay. Anybody else?
We feel uncomfortable.
Okay. We're uncomfortable with it. I have stocks in Apple, so I guess. I do. It's in my part of my pension plan. So I guess I'm worse than a collaborator because we're owners, partial owners. Tiny little piece, minuscule. But seriously, anybody else got a pension plan? Got a pension plan? You don't have pension plans? Okay, you're all nodding your heads. You got pension plans? Yeah, yeah, no, no. How many of you own real estate? That's probably your pension plan right there. Okay? So Jesus goes to the homeless, and Jesus says, I'll show you. Follow me. I'll show you. I'll show you what needs doing. It doesn't feel quite as intimidating to have someone tell me to go preach the gospel, tell the good news. Because I can refuse to do that fairly easily. Most of us do. We're pretty shy about proclaiming the gospel, myself included. I mean, I don't always tell people what I do for a living. I get on an airplane, people say, what do you do for a living? Oh, I teach. You know? It doesn't feel so bad to kind of push Jesus away on that one. But when it comes to the stuff that I value, when it comes to my stuff, and Jesus is going to say to other people, you know, I'm the fish that needs to be hooked sometimes. I'm also the one who needs to hook some fish at other times, right? Follow me. Some of those fishers that Jesus was preaching to, I suspect, had some means, some pension plans. I mean, the sons of Zebedee had hired folk working for them. And yet, Jesus is recruiting them to go take on the persecutors of the poor. Many of us have worked tirelessly to educate people about the poor and about the homeless, and to advocate for the poor and the homeless. So we're hooking fish. This notion that Jesus was a nice guy is problematic. Jesus, Catherine's right, he's a revolutionary. So are you ready to hook some fish? What would that look like? Are you ready for others to come try and hook you? I don't think Jesus ever wanted to found a movement or a church. So we aren't getting the full measure of this text, the full depth of this text, when we make it about converting people to Jesus or bringing people into the church. The real rub of this text comes when we see ourselves as both the Romans, the abusers, and those who are being called by Jesus to usher in the reign of God, the realm of God, which turns everything upside down. If we are not disturbed by this text, because let's face it, if they turn things upside down, that's going to change our lives. If we're not disturbed by this text, we may not be reading it. Jesus is inviting the disenfranchised fishers to follow him, to learn how to hook fish. And if we listen carefully, Jesus is calling upon us to follow him, to incite a revolution, to usher in the realm of God, which is at hand, here and now. Amen.